Listening Dog Media.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie, promoting women's football since 2013.
Hello, this is The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie. I feel like I should call it The Offside Rule on tour because every time I look up lately, Tash is in a different background, a different environment. Where are you now? What have you been up to in the last week?
Oh, honestly, I've been in Texas, haven't I? Isle of Man. Now I'm down in London, but next week, I promise you, I'll be sat in my cozy little home in Liverpool, back to normal.
Well, you promise us. There's lots of promises that I could hold you to this week. You've said for your scouting report that I'm going to be very impressed, which probably means one thing only, everyone. We'll wait until the end. And then we've got our review of matches that we've divvied up. I can't tell you how impressed I am, Natasha, that you've gone into the Mexican League for one of your games. Just give that the quick sell for us.
Yeah, you know me, Liz, there's not many countries I haven't played in, but Mexico was one that I was debating as well. So I've had a few contacts over there and I just saw a little first v second going on, Monterrey versus Tigres. So, that's the one I'm going to be talking about today, giving you a little down low on it's called the Liga MX, the Mexican league over there. And it's definitely a league that's going to be, you know, attracting some top players in the next couple of years.
Right, we want some context with that then, because I imagine, like myself, a lot of the listeners are thinking, I don't know much about the Mexican League, so you're going to have to give us some context for that one. I'm dipping into the Championship, Sheffield United 2, Crystal Palace 0, big result for Sheffield United, trying to get away from relegation and the potential to be relegated to another tier below. So they've done their hopes the world of good in the last couple of matches. And then we start with a Friday night match, because in WSL, we were both transfixed on this one. We begin our reaction to the three standout matches from the weekend with Chelsea 3, Arsenal 1. Now, I've got so many friends that sit on different sides of this fence. And immediately when it was at Stamford Bridge, I had loads of Arsenal fans, Tash, saying, oh, this is great for us because we love playing Chelsea at the big stadiums. Had it been at King's Meadow, we would have been more fearful. And that was famous last words in this game.
Absolutely famous last words. Yeah, I think it took us all by surprise, if I'm being completely honest. I'm not saying I was surprised that Chelsea won, but the pure domination of Chelsea. You know, I actually think the scoreline flatters Arsenal a little bit. I think it should have been more and could have been more. You know, obviously, let's give us some feedback. So 3-1 to Chelsea on the day. But it was a six-pointer, wasn't it, Lindsay, going into this? Mm. It was huge, you know, both of these two teams fighting for the title. Chelsea obviously have now gone top on 40 points, only 3 points above City. But now, from Arsenal losing, they're 6 points behind Chelsea now. So they could have gone joint top if they'd beat Chelsea.
Yeah.
And their form going into the game, you'd fancy them. You know, they battered Chelsea at their place, 4-1. You know, it was a big, big result that game. So you'd think they would be full of confidence coming into this game. But just from the off, you know, let's just talk firstly about the players that Chelsea are missing, the likes of Sam Kerr, Ramirez, Fischl, Millie Bright. You know, they've got probably half of their team actually in the stands, not even on the bench. So to really dominate Arsenal the way they did, you know, from the first, what, they're 3-0 down after 30 minutes. You know, I'm going to touch on a few things that I felt during the game, and I don't know if you agree with me here. I think the Arsenal starting 11, I think he got it wrong. I think you've got to start Russo in this game. She's been in good form.
That.
You know, I'm not saying Black Stinius isn't effective.
Well, this was my argument. I had this on the group as well, and I'm completely with you. Is I think everyone knew that he was going to start with Black Stenius because of the pace. Okay, he wanted that ball in behind, and he wanted her to stretch, and he's done it before. But I think the first goal in this game was so key that you start with your best and you bring Stenius on potentially in the second half when legs are flagging and players aren't as fresh. I think she's brilliant to come on and then stretch play even further. So I agree. I think he got that the wrong way round, although it didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, 100%. And I think as well, if you're looking at those two, Russo's more clinical than Black Stenius, in my opinion. So I think have someone that's got an eye for goal. And then, like you said, when Chelsea tire, you've got the energy, the legs of Black Stenius to come in. Secondly, I thought the midfield got bullied, if I'm being completely honest. I think potentially in a game like this, you maybe have to have a Marnham in there. You know, someone that, you know, can get around, use her body. You know, she's got an eye for goal. She's a threat going forward. So I wasn't too sure that they got the midfield three right either. And I think Williamson still really looks like she's struggling. She doesn't look like herself. You know, do you start her or do you bring her on? I know she's your captain. I know you want her to be playing and be involved. And with England as well, it's important that she's back playing and getting minutes. But I really think her and Ruben Moy struggle massively to be able to contain Lauren James. The way she was getting into those pockets in front of the back two, dropping deep to get on the ball. I mean, look, we know how good Lauren James is. I've said this before. She could be one of the best, if not the best in the world. And she loves playing at Stamford Bridge. I think every time she plays here, she's either scoring hat-tricks or she's getting goals. But I really do think them two struggle as well. What was your thoughts on that?
Well, I think as soon as you let Chelsea play like they are the home side, which is what I thought happened from kickoff, is that Arsenal very much looked to what Chelsea were doing rather than taking their game. And I was talking about potentially having players pinned to either wing to stretch the play, to open up those gaps in midfield. And that was my idea of how Chelsea potentially could have got Arsenal in all sorts of trouble, sort of chasing shadows. But in the end, it surprised me how central they went. I mean, yes, I thought Lauren James had a lot of freedom. She drifted in. But there were massive gaps in front of that D, central in front of goal, where shots were being taken from there all the time. And I could not believe that that wasn't an area of the pitch after about 15, 20 minutes that it wasn't communicated. We just need to put someone higher up there to stop players having the ball in that area. I thought it was causing a lot of problems. And the problem as well, I think, when you look for the goalkeepers, is there's so many shots and so many players that can shoot from outside the box. And I do think you're asking a lot when there's a lot of feet, a lot of bodies, a potential deflection along the way as well. It's a lot to ask of the goalkeeper. So I think the goalkeepers will have been quite annoyed that their defenders weren't protecting them a bit more, certainly from Zinsberger's point of view.
Yeah, and I think touching on goalkeepers, you know, I'm not one to out people. And I think Zinsberger actually in the second half kept the score line down. I think if it wasn't for her, it could have been maybe 8 or 9, to be honest, for Chelsea. But I think that first goal, Lindsay, you know, that's where your big keepers need to be. Yeah, she was exposed, but that can never go in. Lindsay, you have to save that. And this is why maybe potentially there's been talks with the Aston Villa goalkeeper. There's been talks with Mary Earps. You know, really for the last 2 years, Arsenal have been looking for a goalkeeper. And really that first mistake by Zinsberger has then given even more momentum to Chelsea. You know, so I think she was really at fault for that. And really it's an area that I do think they need to strengthen as well if they want to be challenging for titles and for the league next year.
So with Chelsea getting this win, who do you think will win the title? Do you think it's going to be Manchester City or do you think it's going to be Chelsea or can Arsenal suddenly come from out the depths of despair now?
It's a great question. I think Chelsea need to get their players back. I fancy City if Chelsea can't get their players back because I think they've got too many injuries right now. But
me too. Yeah.
You can't deny Chelsea, you know, 3 years in a row, this could be their fourth. Emma Hayes leaving, it's kind of like a Liverpool Klopp situation. You know, they're going to go all out to try and make it happen. I've said it before that I think Arsenal are out of the title race and they came back and won and proved me wrong. So maybe this week I need to learn and say they're not. But I do see it only being Chelsea and City now to compete. So I'm going to, Joe, what, Lindsay, I'm going to go for City. I think City are going to win the league.
I agree with you. I think City could just do it. And it might even be that it comes down to goal difference. And I really fancy Chelsea to give them it right till the end of the season. I think it could come down to the final day. But
yeah,
I don't know. There's something about the fact that they haven't got other cup competitions now. They, you know, they had such a bad week, City, that they've only got this to focus on now. But I think it was the one thing that they really want. And Chelsea will pick up a trophy somewhere. So, okay, we'll move on to the Championship game then. Sheffield United 2, Palace 0. And I mean, it's so unpredictable, isn't it, this league? Every time we speak, you know, you've got a team that are going for the title.
No.
No one wants to win the championship. And then no one knows when they're beaten either in terms of potentially going down. So I don't think we should just talk about Sheffield United in this game. The fact that they beat Watford in the game before as well, you know, that's vital 6 points that they needed to try and get out of trouble. I think that they'll be all right now. And set pieces. I mean, set pieces in the women's game, I think, are more important than in the men's game. I think you can get many more goals from set pieces. Both of these came from corners. Brown, the first one, it was like a glancing header towards the back post. And originally, and I'm going to ask your opinion on this, originally I thought that was brilliant placement. But then there's also me thinking, is there a part of that going through a sea of legs and defenders should have done better? But I don't know. I thought it was a really good header.
No, it was a great header. No, really, really good header, in my opinion. I think it's a great delivery, whipped in, and she's used the pace of the delivery just to glance it on. You know, them kind of headers you can easily miss. So, you know, when I watched the highlights back, to me straight away, I thought that's a great finish.
And then the second goal came from a corner, and this was one, it was lumped in towards the back post, and it was one of those awkward balls for a goalkeeper. It was an awkward finish. It was a bit clumsy, but you have to be there to score them. They aren't the sorts of goals I like to see, to be honest, but for Sheffield United, they won't care. But it does make you think that if you've already conceded from a corner, come on, you've got to be a bit more switched on and have players in better positions. There was no one at that far post, really, that was tall enough for starters.
Yeah, that's my pet hate. I always like people being on post. So I think it's a great delivery by Jodie Hutton. You've seen it many a times with your Katie Zellums, your McCabe's, you know, those kind of in-swinging corners where you can almost score from them. And it actually made me laugh because I actually think it was going in direct. But Isabel Goodwin, I literally think she kind of like just headed it on the line. And I thought that is exactly what I would do. You know, anything for a goal, even if it glanced off a strand of hair. Yeah, anything for a goal. If it glanced off a strand of hair, I'm claiming it. So good on Isabel Goodwin to make sure she got a little goal and maybe a goal bonus as well.
Yeah. And I have noticed as well in pay more attention to the Championship this season as we have been and watching a lot more of the highlights, a lot more of the matches, I do think that they are being very well coached at the moment, and I can see a turnaround in how they've been playing. I think they look much more organised, and yes, these set pieces have been a weapon, but I think it's much more than that. I think there's a togetherness to the side. A shame for Palace as well. I don't know who's going to take the actual promotion race by the scruff of the neck, but someone needs to. Maybe it'll be after the internationals.
It's wild, isn't it? You know, you look at that, and I think it's great because it obviously shows how competitive the Championship is now, that anyone can beat anyone, and that's what you want to see. But every week you kind of think, okay, what team's going to, like you say, like take control, get that win, the little kind of breathing space. But then you see bottom team Sunderland losing to London City Lionesses. Again, there's only, 5 points between the top five. So it's going to come to the wire, and there's going to be probably 5 or 6 teams in it, which is great to see. That's what you want to see. You want to see that competitiveness every single week. And lovely to see Lewis as well getting 3 points at last. When I saw they were winning and 2-0 up, I thought they're going to throw it away again like they do every week. And then I saw, obviously, I think it was Watford got one goal back, but they held out. So that was great to see.
Well, maybe we are the Midas touch for Lewis, because after we had Holly Alding on, she was playing against Blackburn. She ended up scoring in that game after we'd spoken to her. She was brilliant as well in this one. I just think that at the bottom, there is so much more still to play out. So between the relegation race and the promotion race, I do think the championship is must watch at the moment. Let's give you your soapbox then for the Mexican League. I think we need the context first, because there might be people thinking, I didn't even know that the Mexican League was a thing. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so the content was is every year when I'm thinking of where I want to play next, or I was obviously talking to Benfica in Portugal, and then I saw, you know, that financially the money is getting put into the Mexican League, Saudi Arabia. So, you know, it's definitely a league financially, if you want to go and play that, you can earn some good money. And they've got some good teams. You know, I pronounce my spelling, but Monterrey is in second place, and Tigres women are in first. And they're the big team at the moment. They're like your Benfica of the Portuguese league. You know, they're kind of up there every year, kind of winning titles. So when I saw first v second, I thought, okay, this will be a really interesting game. And I was watching it, and to be fair, Monterrey, they were so unlucky to not get 3 points. They had so many chances. They were really actually unfortunate that they Tigres got offered a penalty after 34 minutes. It was never a penalty. The referee, really poor decision. Karma, the keeper, made the save, so it stayed at 0-0. So I was happy to see that. On the 82nd minute, Monterrey had a chance that was saved on the line, you know, so 5-6 minutes away from getting that late winner. So it was, now the table looks like this. So Tigres is top. They've only played 10, so they're early on in the season with 28 points. Monterrey is 23 points. So there's 5 points separating them. So it would have been great if Monterrey could have closed that gap. But at the moment, you know, it's pretty tight still. But if you look at some of the players playing over there, Lindsay, you've got Hermoso. You know, we know her, the Spanish centre forward, played for Barcelona. You've got Blackwood, the Jamaican, who really had a great World Cup this year. Gatlana, you remember her from South Africa. We spoke about her a lot. Yeah, they've got some big names, you know, and this is what I mean. I think this is going to be the league now, similar to maybe your kind of Saudi Arabian league. I think that maybe towards people's the end of their careers, people might want to go over and potentially financially make a bit of money for 2 or 3 years. So yeah, watch this space with this Mexican league.
Thank you for giving us a dip into the Mexican league, which I wasn't expecting to get on the show this season, but you really are taking us all over the globe this season, Tash. Next up, we've got In the Spotlight. A reminder to anyone, if you've missed any previous episodes, we've got them all on the podcast feed for you to listen to. You get interviews in full, and we just give you a little taster on the main show. You may have heard the David Fernhead chat, that was looking into the Asian player market recently. We had the USL Super League, a deep dive into that. And then Nicole Rolser as well, talking about being a general manager at Bayern Munich. That's just a few of the different interviews we've had. This week, though, we're going to talk about Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Scandinavian football. There are two Scandinavian teams in the quarterfinals of the Women's Champions League this season. So I thought I'd get us an expert on in the form of freelance journalist Phil O'Connor.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Offside Rule with Lindsay Hooper and Natasha Dowie.
Phil, where are you living right now? How do we know each other? And what's your area of expertise, please?
Right. So right now, Lizzie, I'm coming from you to you from my bunker in central Stockholm, where I've lived for the last 25 years. Now, I haven't lived in the bunker all that time, but I've lived here in Sweden all that time. You and I met back when the Euros were in England in, was it 2021 or thereabouts, I think, yeah, post-COVID, yeah. The one that was postponed. And you were working for UEFA, I think, with the England team, and I was working with the Norway team. Because remarkably enough, for an old man with a grey beard like me, my area of expertise, if you will, is Scandinavian women's football. In particular, Norway and Sweden. And for some reason, you thought that the listeners to the Offside Rule podcast would be delighted to hear about that. And I am delighted that they will be, because here I am.
Absolutely. And the reason being is that Scandinavian football, we only have to look at the Champions League this season ahead of the quarterfinals to see two Scandinavian teams in there to know that we should be speaking to you, Phil. We should be getting the lowdown and to know more. Now, Tash and I have already had a debate as to whether it's Häcken or Häcken, but you'll be able to tell us about that team and how we pronounce with the umlaut over the top.
Yes. So it's usually pronounced Häcken in Swedish, right? Okay. It has two meanings. One is the butt or your bum, and the other is a hedge. So I've really no idea where the thing came from. But they are sort of Gothenburg's second club, if you like. Gothenburg likes to see itself as Sweden's first city, but it's actually Sweden's second city over there in the west coast. They call it the best coast. And Häcken basically took over Cup of Göteborg a few years ago. I don't know if you remember, there was a remarkable situation when the team won the Dom Allsvenskan, and then 3 or 4 days later, the crowd behind him were financially went, well, that's enough now, we're going to pull the plug on this. And the whole club just said, what? What's happening here? Wow. And it was taken over then by Häcken, who've had a great history in the men's game, a great club for punching above its weight, but they also have really sound values. They're just the nicest people you could meet. And when they came up with the idea then of, okay, we can't let the champions of the Dom Allsvenskan just go to the wall, as has happened in the past. We saw Tyresö FF many years ago making the Champions League final and then getting weighed down by their debts there. So basically Häcken came in, took over the club, took over the players and their contracts, and have done great work ever since. So they're out there now on Hisingen, and I'm actually going to be down at the game for UEFA now on Wednesday night, and I can't wait. I've been lucky enough to go to some of the group games as well, and what they're doing down there is absolutely amazing. It's incredible to see them and SK Brann over in Norway there. For many years, Scandinavian clubs would have been, you know, you would have looked at Scandinavian clubs as being among the best, if not the best in the world, and then they fell away because, you know, the Women's Super League in England caught up, Italy is catching up, Spain came out of nowhere to catch up, and that kind of thing. So they've really been under threat. But this year, with two quarterfinalists, I think Scandinavian football, or women's football certainly, is coming roaring back.
It's interesting, actually, because Häcken, I look at the roster, and between them and Brann from Norway, I would have thought that Häcken are more of the surprise outfit for you to be in the quarterfinals. And you've already described them as a club that can punch above their weight. Would that sort of sum it up? Has it been a surprise over there?
I don't think it's been a surprise in total. If you watch them every week, they're a really well-coached team. And the same goes for Brann, right? But they've got that sort of mix. They have some really well-established internationals. Aylin Rubinson has just left to go to the Houston Dash in America. Tremendous footballer. And for the young players who are coming in, like Rosa Kafaji, who's playing up front for them, to come in and play alongside her, the goalkeeper, Jennifer Falk, is another fantastically experienced international, has been around for so long now. And they've really, in Häcken, they've hit that mix of bringing in established internationals and experienced players and giving young players the chance to shine. And if you look at the Champions League games, Linz, they've come in and in certain cases the younger players have kind of looked like rabbits caught in the headlights, you know, against Real Madrid, against Paris and that kind of thing, but they've recovered. They haven't really been as badly punished for their mistakes as maybe they might have been playing against a Barcelona, and that has been hugely valuable for those players. But I have to say that tactically they're way ahead of where they've been in recent years, so they know what they want to do. A lot of Scandinavian teams, because they don't have maybe the quality that a top French team or German team might have, they look to play on the counter. But it's not just, okay, we're going to win the ball and then we're going to play on the counter. You have to decide where you're going to play. You have to decide the tempo you're going to play at. There's no point in just hoofing a ball up to somebody if they can't control it with their back to goal and let the rest of the team come up. So they've looked really, really good tactically in terms of how they go in the counter attack. It's still very, very quick. It's still very, very direct, but it's much more controlled than just launching the ball forward, which is where I think that, you know, Scandinavian teams maybe fell down for a few years.
A big thank you to Phil for his time. And you can hear the interview in full because there was much more to it down the podcast feed. It'll be coming out later this week. And I feel really clued up now, Tash, on Scandinavian football. I mean, Phil knows his stuff inside out, but you just forget how many big names there are. Yeah. I mean, he's been living and breathing it for 20 years.
What a passionate guy. You know, it's great to hear. You know, and like I said, having played in those countries, it's nice to kind of see that actually they're getting back on track, you know, and it's positive times ahead, which is great to hear.
Who do you think is top dog at the moment out of Norway and Sweden? I mean, we've got those two sides in the quarterfinals, and then you look at the rankings internationally. Who do you think's got the edge at the moment?
Do you know what? It's a great question, because when I look at Sweden and your Kosovas, Aslanis, you know, those players that maybe are kind of coming towards the end of their international careers, they've got still a lot of youth. But it's the same, you know, with Norway, I just think they've got a younger team potentially for the future. So I think probably that winning mentality, Sweden have the edge right now, because they know what it's like to be competing in major tournaments year in, year out. They've had success in the past. Norway potentially for a long time haven't had that. But I would probably say the future of this Norwegian team and the kind of the youthness, like I said, the kind of potential they've got, I'm excited for that. So right now I'd say Sweden, but maybe in 2 or 3 years' time, I'd say Norway could be overtaking them.
Yes, certainly nations for us to keep an eye on, as we always do with those. I mean, you can never discount them. How about your scouting report then? I am so pleased that you've made me a promise and you are delivering. Go on.
I am delivering. And do you know what? I'm so excited to share this one, because I haven't had to go to any contacts in the Black Book. This is all to do with me, to be honest, Lindsay. I'm going to pat myself on the back here. I created this player.
We should get an emoji going.
So let me tell you the background.
In the corner. Yeah.
Yeah. So, player called Sophia Middleton Patel. So she's a goalkeeper. Okay. You may have heard of her name. I'm not too sure if you have or not, but she's the number 3 at Manchester United at the moment.
Ooh.
So let me give you a little bit of a backdrop on her. So she's behind Mary Earps and Talese Joyce, who's the American that they've got as a number 2 at the moment. She's Welsh. She's 19 years old, so she plays for the Welsh under-19s team. And this season, United have loaned her out to Watford. So at the moment, she's had 2 wins and 3 clean sheets. She is slightly injured at the moment, just with a shoulder issue, but she says she's going to be back within the next couple of weeks. And I need to tell you the story behind it. So when I played at Liverpool in 2013 and 14, in my spare time, I used to do soccer camps at Widnes or at schools around Liverpool every summer and every kind of Easter break and all the holiday breaks. And I used to promote it. And I'd have maybe about 30 to 40 young girls come down with their Dowie shirts on, or, you know, Gemma Davison shirts, you know, a real mixture. And I'd have some of the Liverpool girls come and help me. Amanda Da Costa, Becky Easton, they'd come down, Libby Stout. So when I look back at my pictures when these kids were maybe 5 or 6 years old and I was in my young 20s, I saw a picture of a young girl, and it was Saf. We called her Saf, and she came to one of my camps as a goalkeeper. And there's a picture of her and Lucy Parry, who now plays for the Liverpool women's first team. And they came to my camps when they were 7, 8 years old. And
whatever I told them
on those camps, Lindsay, now they're playing for Manchester United and Liverpool. And it's great. It's great to see her doing so well. I caught up with her last week, you know, over the phone, just to see how she's getting on. She said it's great to be able to, you know, be at United, learning from the best keeper in the world, but also to get the game time that she's getting now at Watford, I think is really important for her development. And I honestly think maybe in 2 or 3 years' time, she could be a starting keeper for a top club in England. So yeah, watch this space.
And I'm being a bit naive here, because I can't picture her. I feel like I should be able to as the third choice at Man United, but I can't beat her at the moment. What's her stature like?
She's not the biggest stature, but she's not small either. So, and she's very good shot stopper. She's athletic. She actually had a pre-season friendly against Liverpool this year, which she did really well against Liverpool when United beat Liverpool 3-1 in the friendly this pre-season. So I got to watch her live. Distribution very good, technically very good. So I think now it's just about getting game time. And, you know, I'm playing for Wales as well. She might take the step up to the national team. So, you know, she's in a good place. You know, she's got great support around her, and she's a really good kid. She's got a really humble, got a good head on her, an intelligent young girl. So I think, yeah, that's why I'm really excited about her future.
Well, she's going to be your one to watch for this week in your scouting report, Sophia Middleton-Patel. And how old do you reckon you were when she did your training camp? How old do you reckon you were?
I was 24. So, yeah, she was a young girl. So, 10, 15 years ago it was.
Who knew that your scouting report was starting so young on? 24 years old. And all of that knowledge, Natasha Dowie, is coming to use right now. That is all we've got time for on the main show this week. We'll leave Tash going away to try and find who she's going to scout for next week. But we will have the mailbag on Friday, so join us for that. We'll be answering some questions in a slightly different fashion because we're going to be introducing a different way of getting your questions into the show over the next few weeks. But yeah, join us for that on Friday. Thank you very much for listening. Do tell your friends and other people who love women's football about us. Leave a review and a comment. It does help other people find us. Thank you very much.
The Offside Rule. This is a Listening Dog Media production. Sports Social Podcast Network.